This episode of the CMO Suite is brought to you by Connectivity Strategies, specializing in micro-targeted full-funnel media strategies for clients like WWE, Corona, First Watch, Coke, and more. Connectivity Strategy, national strength, localized approach. Visit them at connectivitystrategy.com. And Tumi, product quality and selection are key attributes that have made Tumi the leading international business accessory and travel lifestyle brand. I've got the backpack, Stacey. I've got the luggage.
When will I get mine?
I will have to talk to Charlie Cole next, see if we can't hit him up for something else. And finally, No Kid Hungry. We're also incredibly proud to make a contribution in the name of each of our 2019 guests to No Kid Hungry. Your tax-deductible donation will help us provide vulnerable kids in America with nutritious meals so they can focus on being kids, not being hungry. For more information, visit nokidhungry.org. Stacey, let's start the show.
You're in the CMO Suite, the podcast for marketers who want to be in the know, presented by Connectivity Holdings.
Hello and welcome to the CMO Suite. I am your host, Sean Halter, and co-hosting with me for part of our New York episode week is my great friend, Stacey Horton. Hello, Stacey.
Hello, Sean Halter.
I feel like I've known you for probably almost 20 years.
It's been more than 20 years.
Which is strange because you look 25.
Oh, thank you.
Am I allowed to say that?
I feel 25.
I'm not sure. Well, listen, we're excited. We have with us as our guest today, John Militello. John is the principal over at Longblink. John, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Well, thanks for joining us on the show. Come straight up onto that mic, my friend. Yeah. I promise we will not bite. So listen, John, I'm going to read a little bit about your background. You're a creative guy at heart, but obviously you've spent time, you were with Volvo Cars, I think, was that most recently, just before you started Longblink?
Yes.
And where did you actually start your career? Or how did you get into this crazy industry known as marketing?
Well, that goes way back. I think even as a child, I think I was always marketing something, right? So whenever I wanted something, I would draw a picture of it or circle it in the newspaper for my dad to buy that Sony Walkman
yeah.
You know, and kind of always trying to market things. Even in high school, we did posters for art club and for theater. And then I realized really early on when I went to school for art and fine arts especially.
You realized that you had a passion for it.
Yeah, well, I realized that I didn't want to just be a fine artist. I was a painter, and I started oil painting when I was in second grade. I really wanted to make a living at this. And so when I was in art school, I switched my major.
From art to advertising?
From fine arts to advertising, yes.
And so it's funny. When I was a kid, I feel like I almost did the same thing. I'd watch shows, but I'd be watching for the commercials almost as much as the show. And I was just always fascinated with how that industry worked to some extent. Isn't that weird how when you're a kid that almost defines you in some ways, huh?
I have a really great story about
it. We'd love to hear it.
So when I got my first job in the advertising studio, I was doing a design studio. We did a lot of work for Ford Motor Company, J. Walter Thompson, Little Caesars Pizza, Detroit Red Wings.
Were you living in Detroit at the time?
I was living in Detroit at the time, worked at an art studio. I got the job while I was still in art school because I needed to understand, is this the right career move for me? I'm paying a lot for a private school. And we were in the mat room one day and we're doing the chairmanship. We have all these 8.5 by 11, 17 ads up in the mat room. It's a room kind of like this where you could stick things to the wall. And I looked around and I realized I was in my bedroom, because in my bedroom in high school, back where I grew up, they weren't posters, they were car ads.
That's so interesting,
right?
Isn't it?
Yeah. So then I was like, wow, I'm really living what I wanted
as a kid,
visioned out as a 16-year-old, yeah.
Pretty early on in your career as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so that must have felt empowering, certainly to some extent, and it may have also at least made you feel like you're on the right path.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Where did you go to school?
College for Creative Studies in Detroit.
And that's in Detroit. And so fresh out of college, that's when you went to work for J. Walter?
No, actually, I was at a design studio, and our main client was J. Walter Thompson.
Okay. And how long did you spend there?
About 3 years. So I started off in the mat room and moved up to senior designer before I left.
And so how long did you end up staying in Detroit, and what took you out of Detroit?
So about 5 years. A lot of my friends in art school, my girlfriend at the time was like, you have to go to New York. You have to check it out. I sent her. I was like, you do not want to go to New York. And she's like, why?
You sent her on a reconnaissance mission almost?
Yes, I did.
Go check this thing that's called New York out. It doesn't feel too new to me from what I've seen.
And I loved Detroit. I loved the car business. I actually wanted to be a car designer for a long time. And then I realized I wanted to do advertising for cars. And I said, somebody's going to move me to New York. I don't want to go there. To me, it would be like a drug. I would feel the energy and want to take a U-Haul and move,
and then
I'd be like, am I going to end up like in St. Mark somewhere? Like, I don't know what's going to happen to me.
Yeah. So you almost felt like you wanted somebody to not pursue you, but you wanted the mission to be what pulled you to the city, if that was where your path was supposed to be, rather than let's just go and move to the big city and see what the heck happens.
Yeah, it was kind of a weird decision. And what was cool, though, is the next hire I got out of the design studio was a small marketing firm that had headquarters in Boston, offices in New York and L.A. So I thought that's a great opportunity possibly transfer.
Navigate through.
Which is exactly what happened.
What was that job?
That was a art director's job. And we were doing a lot of, I would say, below the line work for Lincoln Mercury, Ford new product launches, Ford heavy truck in Detroit, and for Volvo, actually, on the East Coast. And then when I came out here on the East Coast, I helped us secure the Mercedes account to launch the certified pre-owned program called Starmark back then.
So automotive has also always been kind of part of that path for you as well, it sounds like. Almost each touch has been in the automotive industry to some extent.
To some extent, yes.
And do you feel like that the path for you was defined by the fact that you did really understand that business and what gets consumers to warm from one brand to the next? Or that's what you had a passion for is cars, and so that's therefore you're living through your passion?
Well, I think it's the latter, right? I think I have passion for cars, and I think that's really what drove me. I also had passion for creating art, and I felt that commercial art, creative advertising was a way to kind of subversively put your own art into the world and get corporations to be the patron to pay for that.
So everybody's talking these days, and I want to make sure we spend some time talking a little bit about your time at Volvo and certainly the new company that you've got out there. But everybody these days is talking about content, and it seems like the old way certainly of doing things. We had a guest in that was talking basically about this almost being a post advertising generation to some extent. And so how do you feel like you saw that shift kind of taking place from the days of building really amazing, beautiful ads that consumers could kind of live vicariously through to today's consumer, almost no matter what age you are, where you're wanting something of more substance or value within whatever that ad content is?
Yeah. You know, one of the things with advertising, even since the beginning, that I noticed is that the promise of that glossy 30-second or print ad never really delivered. To me, I kind of liken it to that set on Blazing Saddles where it's a fake town.
Yeah.
Freak everybody out and behind it, it's nothing, right?
Stay on that because that's a great point. And I think it's a point worth re-hitting on for a second. The fact that we're changing from this fake set that everybody kind of knows, it's like wrestling. You know it's fake, right?
Right.
It's almost better in some ways now that you know that it's scripted because it's more authentic to some extent. And maybe you can relate to it a little bit more. I'm not sure.
Well, I think the consumer realizes now that it is scripted, but the proof is in the pudding. So it's really about being authentic. And everybody throws that word around. Authentic isn't lo-fi or scrappy or crappy. It just means that you deliver on the promise. So if you have a high-end ad when somebody shows up at your store or buys your product, it matches the veneer that you've put on it, right? And I think that's really what it's about. So consumers are in control to some degree, but they're only in control in that they will like your product or your service if it delivers.
As you were working your way through the industry, though, and as some of that transformation started to take place, how did it feel and how have you been able to help guide from a CMO position to ensure that the brands that you're working with have started to follow that path of authenticity?
To me, it's about looking inward and looking at the people who design the product, the people who market the product, the people who build the product. That's the authentic knit self, or why the company was founded or the product was executed and delivered and conceived. So if you can kind of bring that inside out to the consumer, it's authentic because it's not, you're not adding something on top of something. And in most companies, people are completely passionate about the product or the service that they're delivering. Yes.
Yeah. How did you end up over at Volvo? From the previous work that you had done, or?
So I had multiple touches with Volvo throughout my career. When I first came out here, we worked on Volvo. So I got to see firsthand the brand and how it worked. It was great. We were so close to headquarters in the U.S. And then I left that smaller marketing firm or agency with a couple people from there to start a small boutique agency.
How did that go?
It went well for about 9 years. We were 14 employees up to about 7 million in billing. So it was pretty small boutique. It was a fun I would have loved to turn it into something bigger, but I think
that's
the recession,
still pretty big, though.
Yeah. But in terms of selling, helping us sell it, and move it into like a bigger holding company piece to kind of graduate to the next level.
Sure.
There, I think the issue had to do with the recession, and a lot of timing happened, and that's around the time I ended up leaving and doing a year on my own as a designer to get back to my roots, and then I ended up at YouTube, Google. But we had conceived, and Volvo was our first client. I also brought Mercedes-Benz, the certified pre-owned program, in because we had contacts there.
I'm going to pause you for a second because I promise you we've got a half an hour, which is great. Thank you for the time. You've got a great and interesting journey along the way, and I don't mean to cut you off other than sometimes you'll say something that's interesting, and so I want to make sure we don't miss that moment. So we'll make sure we get to Google. It's a company I think I'm somewhat familiar with. They do phones or technology or something.
Yeah.
I want to make sure we hit on a Volvo. But I want to go back to the business for just a second, the business that you started, and obviously we want to make sure we save some time for the business that you started now. There's a lot of CMOs, there's a lot of marketers, there's a lot of media people, marketing people who work for big companies, and they're just like, you know what? I'm tired of working for this machine, and I want to be able to build something on my own. Then you jump out, and you maybe don't realize there's also the business part of business. Mm-hmm. And sometimes getting in that business part of business, you end up losing passion or time for the thing that you jumped out for in the first place. So as you were talking about kind of building this company up, and you had some friends, and you were doing that, how much of your time was being spent on the business part of that and not on the part that you jumped out for in the first place? And I only say that because I think it's important for marketers who are listening to this who are just, they're so frustrated, they're so tired of what's happening, and maybe they're having that thought.
Yeah, no matter what you're in, that's exactly what happens, right? So you reach this point, it's like the waves on an ocean. So you reach this point where you're not doing the work, you've got people working for you, you're now managing the client. So I was the creative director and vice president, and I found that I was managing part of the staff, the freelance staff, the client directly, as well as my team. So the time I had behind the things I love to do, like design and Photoshop, Illustrator, and read and look at films and concepts, became less and less.
But maybe you also had to take that journey. You know, we're at iHeart Studio. I want to once again give a great shout out to iHeart. You got some friends that are here too, right? What was the name you dropped when you walked in the door?
Tim Costelli. He is one of the guys that hired me when I was at Google and helped create the zoo.
So at some point, you know, we're going to go look for Tim, and I'm going to use you as my entry point. I worked for iHeart before I started my agency, and I had almost started an agency to some extent to create a little bit of a relatability. I got pulled into Linda Bird's office. She's a regional for them out of Florida. And she's actually the one that caused me to kind of just pause for a moment, because she did ask me this question. She was like, hey, I know that you're thinking of starting an agency, and congratulations, but what do you know about HR? And what do you know about this? And what do you know about leasing? And I remember I went back home to my wife and I was like, hey, maybe I'm not ready for this. And honestly, I've got to give her some credit. Maybe I wasn't. You know, at the time, I had this world-eyed view of what I was going to go out and do, but I needed a little bit more time to realize that there is some work behind the work. So
Yeah. Well, you know what's interesting about that? My wife is, throughout my career, had the opposite view. Was like, you need to go out on your own. You
congratulations,
your own drummer. Do it. Even when we had the small agency, she was like, you really just should go out on your own and build something and lead it. And I think a lot of that is because when you're working in a structure, especially a big corporate structure, you start to have to fit into that structure.
Sure.
And if you're more independent, it kind of changes who you are and how you deal with people.
And my wife was supportive as well. Gosh, I don't feel like I don't want to throw her in the grease. I think she just felt like, you do what you need to do. I needed to leave there and go to another market to learn another market to feel like I was ready to go out and start, in essence, something on my own. And I'm actually glad. I think I would have failed. The reality is, I think in hindsight, I probably would have failed because I wouldn't have been prepared enough for it. So you built that, and then you decided at some point to either sell it off. And is that then when you took the job over at Google?
Yeah. So what I did is I kind of farmed the work I had for the clients I had and kind of gave that and worked with other people that were working with me on those projects. And I had been doing so much work with Google, YouTube at the time. And right at the
How long ago was that?
That was 2007 to 2008.
So 10 years ago, 11 years ago. It's amazing. I think Facebook just had their 15-year anniversary.
Yeah,
it feels like 30, you know, which is weird because my club age is 37. So I don't know.
Club age.
Thank you very much, Stacey. Please take that. Use it as your own. So you really were working with them kind of at the precipice of when they really were kind of hitting their stride to some extent.
Yeah, and it was a year into YouTube, the acquisition, right? I certainly did not want to work for anybody. I was like building my own business. You know, when you come in as a consultant, they give you an email address and a computer. I was using my own, building my own brand, using my own computer. And at the very end, as we were working on this really big project, I was in about 2-3 days a week. And I go, you know, if there's a man to work for, I want to work for this man. This would be great. I'll give it a year. And ended up there 7 years after that.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what all were you doing there?
So I was part of this brand accelerator team that was eventually called XPS Cross-Platform Solutions. Again, you know, Google was trying to marry all these different platforms for advertisers to use.
These kids these days, they don't realize this stuff was all split. Even talking about YouTube as an acquisition, they're like, what do you mean? There was a pre-Google time for YouTube?
It was only a year. But so they wanted to bring that all together for advertisers other than just search, right? So they were going beyond search, in even beyond display. Like, what could we do with content with this platform, even though we can't create content? What can we do with this rich media acquisition that we have DoubleClick? So it kind of started from there, and I was the only creative with a bunch of really smart young people who were they didn't want to quite be salespeople. They wanted to package marketing ideas up.
Think of the fact that they were such a precursor for what you've just said, though. I mean, the fact that everybody's trying to figure out how to create multiple content distribution now. They're trying to figure out how to create multiple levels of revenue stream. And again, to put a button on this, nobody wants to be sold to. They were even talking about that 7 or 8 years ago. How can we utilize content to educate? And through education, we'll create know, like, and trust, and then people will want to do business with us.
Right. And that's the key. And so that's what we were trying to package up, all these different ways of understanding the YouTube ecosystem.
Was it all whiteboarded? I mean, are you guys literally like sitting in a room like, well, how in the hell are we going to build something that really sounds like it should be easy, but how do we put it all together?
Well, a lot of it was working with the teams inside of, so there were the marketing teams, the YouTube team, and the content team inside of, and the brand entertainment people. So there's all these different teams within.
How did everybody work together?
Well, everybody had their own little fiefdoms, and we tried.
Who did you not like? And come on, let's spice this up a little bit. That Dave Johnson, you know, he constantly erased my boards.
Well, I have to say, one of the
John Militello. This is your chance. No, it's okay. It's all right.
No. But honestly, I think one of the great things about a company like Google and the kind of people they attract is, you know, that 80-20 rule applies in reverse. And most companies, 20% of the people do 80% of work. I think at Google, it's the opposite. It's so many smart people. So sometimes you're in a room and, you know,
you're creative energy.
You're just like, what am I doing here? Everybody is so smart, and it makes you raise your game to a higher level. So that's what's really great about it. I think there's also this love naivety of, yeah, you have seasoned people in the industry and you're bringing in new people and you got all these fresh young minds. They're trying to say it's a no-brainer to advertiser.
Old school. Right.
Right. Like,
why do you point at me when you say old school, Stacey? This shouldn't be on video this time because you say old school, she points at me.
Well,
she didn't point at you, John. Thanks a lot, Stacey.
Yeah, I was pointing to Sean. You didn't see that. Yeah. It's off camera, though.
But you had this nice mix of people, it sounds like. So you had these young guns that were like, let's just do it. Who cares what the rules are? We're Google.
Right. And it's like, hey, look, this is no brainer. You should be doing this. So it was really on the forefront, the very, very, very leading edge of content, of why it matters, of being authentic before what we have today, yeah. Right? And it's all kind of come to fruition very fast. And you see Twitter and the Creative Shop at Facebook
Twitter again.
Do the same type of thing. They're trying to create these teams.
I have avoided Twitter like the plague, and it's the one platform I know I'm supposed to be on it. And then I got off of it, and then Trump had to go win the presidency. Now everything is happening on Twitter, and then Antoniello was like, you need to be on Twitter, man. I'm like, oh my God, you know? So I know. I told him I got two passwords. I can't figure out which account. I don't know. I'll get there.
We'll get
I have teams for that
there.
Now.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah,
we'll get
yeah,
us there.
Yeah, that's good.
So you end up staying there for a while, and then was Volvo your next stop?
Yes. So working at Google and creating, then in that time, I was the only creative, and we started saying, well, we need more people. Like, what happens at Google is you start to get in demand, and how do you can't clone yourself. And when your performance reviews say, we'd like to clone you, so you start building your own team.
What a great compliment. Say that again.
Well, they like to clone you. Like,
so, love that.
Which is kind
of Stacey,
scary.
There's a bunch of producers, okay? Let's be honest. But, you know, but we'll get there.
But you have to realize that you have to hire really good people and people that are better than you. And
that's a sign. It's a sign of true leadership, though. Don't you always feel like is yeah. that when you hire people that are better than you, that can tap you on the shoulder and say, "Well, this is how we do it now." That's when you know that you've led and you've created a legacy, at least to some extent.
And you kind of want your position to outgrow you or kind of go beyond your capabilities to some degree.
Sure.
By hiring really great people. And that's what we did over the course of that time. And it went from me as an individual contributor, one person, to a 14-person creative team. You know, not just New York, but we were, you know, had somebody in Detroit, LA, and San Bruno. So now all of a sudden, I've built this team that was far smarter and better than me and better than what I could do. And I also thought, what if I was going to be here for 1 year and now I'm here for 7 plus a year consulting? What? And
went so, fast.
Yeah, it went very fast. And it's hard to leave that bubble of Google because it is a bubble. You know, you go to airports and you go buy something and you realize you have to go back and pay for it because you're just used to going to the snack and the mini bar. So I decided.
Listen, I buy my team's lunch one day a month. That's enough.
Right.
It's enough.
It keeps them honest. But so I started thinking about what do I want to do next? And we were always talking about going upstream. And I looked at some agencies, considered some big agency jobs. Some of them would require a move. And I was on the way to the interview on the West Coast for a job at an agency, and my old client at Volvo and I connected via email, and he happened to be coming the opposite way.
That's funny.
Going actually to New York and then to Sweden, and he said, "Oh, you're leaving. Would you want to talk to the people in the U.S.?" And we're starting to rebuild the team after the Ford
acquisition.
Well, Ford sold it to Geely, and so all that. And so we started having conversations, and one thing led to another. And here I am. I find myself kind of in my dream job, being at the very top of understanding where real ideas come from a marketing standpoint, how to position.
Was that your first real CMO?
Yeah. I think...
to some extent?
Yeah. So everything else had been more creative director, executive creative director, you know, leading the creative team at Google was a very big creative role. It was like an ECD role.
Clearly, they felt like you at least had the vision to be able to help guide them in the direction they need to. And such an interesting brand. I mean, to me, to some extent, Volvo is. I know we could spend half an hour really just talking about that evolution and the Ford piece that came off and everything else that's happened with it. I want to make sure we get some time to talk about what you've got going on now. And so you spent some time at Volvo. How long did you end up staying there?
About 3 years, and it was a great opportunity. I represented the Americas as well in the global marketing team. So, that was an interesting thing because those creative jobs and marketing jobs ebb and flow of control. So when I had just arrived, the U.S. was taking back control because Sweden had pulled and said, "No, everybody out of the pool. No more. You guys can't create anything.
Something is floating. Let's get everybody out."
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so we came back in and we started building and using our agencies to really build creative that was really bespoke for the U.S. and the audience and the way we needed to reposition the brand. And that's where it really started. And then I left to start LongBlink.
So talk to us. We've got a few minutes left to talk about it. Talk to us about LongBlink. Tell us what you're hoping to kind of build out of it.
Yeah. So my business partner, Sean Miller.
Great name. Great first name, by the way. Don't you think, Stace?
Sure.
There's something about the name Sean.
Sean. Exactly. So we met when our kids were in preschool and I happened to be at Google and he was at RGA. And we started talking about our kids and technology. And he said, "Listen, I'm doing this. I have this idea for South by Southwest thing." This is around 2012. He said, I think it'd be really cool to us to do it together. And it's, you know, RGA and Google. And we did this little thing, your CMO or your 4-year-old is smarter, more digitally savvy than your average CMO. So it was really kind of an interesting thing. We had no idea what reaction we were going to get. We were South by Southwest and everybody kept coming, "Oh, I want to see your thing, but I'm leaving that day," because it happened to be the last day.
Everybody's trying to get the hell out of that airport.
Yeah, of the interactive and creative and advertising part. We ended up having, I think, the second or third highest attendance of that year because I looked at the spreadsheet with all the different Google events.
Of course you did.
It was amazing. So that partnership really helped us understand each other, know we could work together. When I was at Volvo, working with Gray, Matt O'Rourke was our executive creative director at Gray, and we were both like almost like partners.
How do you remember all these names? I'm the worst with names. You seem to know a lot of people. Yeah, you work with good people.
Really closely with people. They're like friends or brothers. And Matt was like a brother, so we worked really close together. It was great as a creative to have this kind of yin and yang. And I found the same thing with Sean. He's a strategist. He ended up at Roken as a chief strategy officer. Roken is Cadillac's digital agency. And I called him for some advice about a possible move. I was going to be moved to run Asia Pacific for Volvo. And I had some issues moving the family there.
Sure.
And I decided against it. And
the timing just lined up.
The timing lined up. Sean told me about the eclipse. We were working on a project for the eclipse. I'm going to draw a line in the sand. A friend told me it's like a long...
The eclipse is a car, not the solar eclipse that's happening.
No, the solar eclipse, yes.
Oh, really?
Wow.
Yeah, so we were doing a big thing around the solar eclipse for Volvo with CNN.
Oh, okay.
And he said...
I know where this is going.
Yeah, he said, look, I'm feeling the same way you're feeling. I'm on the ad agency side.
Yeah.
And I feel like I want to kind of march to my own beat. And I'm going to take my family. We're going to see the eclipse. I need to spend time with my family. I'm not spending nearly enough time with them. We're going to go to Nashville. We're going to take that 2.5 minute long blink, as somebody told him. He was doing a little film on it.
Okay.
And
damn, I missed that in my research notes.
This reflection, right? And I was like, that's really cool. And I said, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do, because if I say no to this, I'm going to have to say no to the next thing and the next thing, because it's just the moves aren't in the cards, I think, overseas at that point in my career is, I think, left.
So you took a long blink.
So I did. And I called Sean up and I said, what about if we do this together? And what do you want Long Blink to be? Because at first it was a film and kind of like a documentary. And we spent 3 months just meeting with people, talking to different people we respect throughout the industry and throughout the country. We went to New Orleans. We have now have a partner there. And we decided, here are the things that we want to do. And we really believe that taking a long blink or a purposeful pause is actually a competitive advantage. One of the things I found at both my jobs, most recent jobs at both Google, but especially on the brand side as a marketer at Volvo, is you're managing up, you're managing around, and you're doing a lot of busy work, and it's really difficult to tell your boss or your CEO that this is not a marketing challenge. Let sales, let operations and network fix these other things. Marketing is here.
Yeah.
These are the and I think there's this tendency now of this, we live in a very immediate culture,
sure,
where everybody thinks that everybody needs to roll up their sleeves and pitch in and help on a problem, and that's not always the answer. So we're trying to outsource this long blink, this purposeful pause for brands to say, what's that long-term strategy? How do you stay on track? So that's where we both saw the need. It's very difficult when you're in the mix, in the soup, in the mosh pit.
To take the pause.
Yeah, and that's my biggest disappointment when I'm in that role. It's hard to pull back.
So let's put a button on that with this. First of all, John Militello, CEO, is that the title that you have? Chief Poobah of all things Long Blink?
Well, no, I have a partner, so we're co-partners.
Co-partner. Yeah.
Co-principals.
Yeah. Co-principal. And I always misspell that word anyway. But my point is this. You've spent some time with us. That half an hour went fast, didn't it?
Very fast.
We were kind and gentle to you, weren't we?
Yes.
And in return, you're going to introduce us to the president of iHeart, who should be floating around here somewhere. But if people take nothing away from these episodes, this to me is one of those really interesting ones, because on top of people's journeys, which are interesting, on top of talking about all these deep things about what's happening with context and content, this last part is perhaps maybe one of the most prophetic for CMOs of a certain level, which is you, whether you use Long Blink or whether you take this pause yourself, you've got to figure out some time within the structure of your year to literally take a moment and just pause and figure out how to quiet your brain and quiet yourself and quiet the brand and really maybe just dig into what in the world are we really trying to do here?
Absolutely. There's just a lot of noise and having to create a lot of content. No longer that pyramid doesn't even work, right? So that head content that you're creating, that $1 million, $2 million commercial, isn't what a consumer might see, that $50,000 video or piece of content or co-branded content or something else, right?
Yeah.
So you have to really understand the whole thing. And it's very hard when you're
running
managing
1,000 miles an hour.
And most CMOs are now running to this KPI of this immediate delivery, this tyranny of the immediate sale.
It's important for CEOs to understand that as well, though.
Yes.
That, you know, it's like taking recess away from kids. Recess is one of the best things you can do for kids because it creates so many amazing things. And not that Long Blink is recess for CMOs, but it is a chance to be able to just live outside of that structure and whatever length of time that is that the corporation allows you. So, well, listen, our time is up. John Militello, right. Partner for Long Blink, a chief poobah of all things. We want to thank you for joining us on the show. If you want to find out more about John Militello, you can visit him on LinkedIn and stalk him there. That's what I did, and it does work sometimes. Mm-hmm. Or, of course, you can visit thecmosuite.com to find out more about him and more about this episode. Stacey, please take us out of the show. Thank you very much.
Thanks for hanging out in the CMO Suite. The podcast for marketers who want to be in the know. Presented by Connectivity Holdings.
You're a C-level manager. You shouldn't have to know the difference between behavioral or contextual targeting, but your agency should. Uconnects provides brands and biddable teams direct access to platforms like The Trade Desk, Google, Amazon, Facebook, OTT, and more. Their U.S.-based traders can train your in-house team or provide complete transparency with no minimums and CPM-based service pricing for true transparency, something Mighty Hive, The Trade Desk, and Centro simply don't offer. Tired of being the smartest one in the room? Reach out to Uconnects today for a free demo. Uconnects, the world's leader in true, transparent, biddable media.